traditional Shia. But what do we mean by Megillas Esther from Baghdad? Shushan was not Baghdad. Wherever it was certainly quite a distance away, probably about 400 miles. Baghdad is in Iraq. The reason why I chose this topic is because there is a sefer called Dovah Be'ito by Rav Mordechai Sasson from Baghdad. And he was a very well-known Mekubal in his time. He lived about 200 years ago. And he writes amazing things on the subject of Paradays, Peshat, Remez, Rosh Sod, in showing how inner meanings can come to the fore in various explanations, especially Halacha L'maisa. And we once dealt with him on the subject of Hanukkah, so today we're dealing with him on the subject of Purim. He is frequently quoted by the Ben Ish Chai, and otherwise people haven't really heard much of him because his Sforim are now out of print. But anyway, the first question he asks is, why are we fasting on Tanis Esther, the 13th of Adar? And this week, Tanis Esther is Muktam. It's brought forward and we fast on Thursday. Normally, when a fast cannot take place on Shabbos, such as Tisha B'Av, we push it forward to Sunday. All right, you will say, we can't push it forward to Sunday this year because Sunday is going to be Purim and you can't fast on Purim. And you can't push it forward to the Monday because that's Shushan Purim. But why can't you push it forward to the Tuesday? Yeah, so, well, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tanis. The Rambam writes in Perek Hey Alocha Hey Hilchos Tanis that the reason why we fast on Tanis Esther is Zeichel Esther, as a remembrance of the Tanis that Esther did. And it says in the Megillah Divrei Tzamos V'Zakosom. So we've got there an allusion to the fasting that Esther did, and we're not going to fast then, Dafka on Seder nights. The Kaf Lachaim gives another reason. Then Simon Tov Reish Pevov, he says we don't want to be accused by the Soton that when we are eating and drinking on Purim, that we're being so frivolous, and if we go into it with a more serious mind by fasting beforehand, that will put us in the right mood to combat the Soton. But looking at this idea of Muktam, alright, the Shloss says that if the tent of Tevis would be on a Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos, but that's a separate topic. We have the general principle from Gemara Tanis, Kol makdume pro nuso lo makduminon. We do not bring forward, we do not bring earlier a poronius, something which is sad. If something is sad, we don't welcome it earlier, we push it off. Hence the fast of Av is pushed off. Shivasa Batamos is pushed off. So there is a Mordechai at the beginning of the Masechet of Megillah. And there he brings that the fast of Tisha B'Av we delay, v'lo makdiminon, mishum depur on nusohu, because it is a sad event, aval tzom Esther, but the fast of Esther, lo pur on nusohu, it is not a sad day. Why are we fasting on Tanis Esther? It's not through sadness. He says, therefore, it can be earlier. And in fact, there is a din that a chosan in his wedding week, according to many poskim, can eat on Tanis Esther. And we go according to the minhag of the Ramah, if you have a bris milah this Thursday, then it is the practice for the father of the baby and the moel and the sandek to eat, to make a suda straight after, even though it's Tanis. So if anybody's making a bris this Thursday, I'm happy to offer my services as a sandek. No, not as a mile. So the Sefer Ogadayo writes, and he brings from a Rashi and Bashalach and Mechilta, that before we were fighting with Amalek, we fasted. When Amalek was approaching us, we had a fast because we wanted to make sure that we're doing a tshuva to put ourselves on the right track. So Rav Mordechai Sasson in his Sefer Dovah Bita says it goes much deeper than this. Yes, the fast was in Nisan. We're not fasting in Nisan. We're fasting now to fulfill the idea of Mechias Amalek. Because by fasting, we will be saying Selichos, we are doing Tefillah, and that is part of the Purim package in fighting Amalek. We know from Chazal that whenever it says the word Hamelech in Megillah, as opposed to Hamelech Achashverosh, it is an allusion, it is a hint to the Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem. And it says in the Megillah, Ki Chosov, Asher Nichtov B'Shem Hamelech, V'Nachtom B'Tavas Hamelech Ein Lehoshiv. So the rule is spelt out in Megillah Esther, that when King Achashverosh made a decree, he could not annul it. So when he made a decree that the Jews would be killed, he didn't really annul it. All he did was afterwards say that the Jews would be allowed to fight back. Very nice fellow, Achashverosh. He didn't annul the decree. But the Melech, says Rav Sasson, is more than that. It's when Hashem makes a decree that in every single generation, midar dar, there is an Amalek, and Amalek is there to threaten us. Hashem has not taken away that decree. It still exists now, that in every single generation, and we know who is the Amalek now, Haminajad, as well as others, they want to destroy the Jews for no real reason. And by us fasting every single year on Tanis Esther, that is our weapon against Amalek. By saying Slichus, by doing Tefillah, by learning Torah, and as we say in Hakal Kal Yaakov Hayodayim Yedei Esav, there's the famous thing which comes out from the Grot, the Hakol is written without a Vav, so you can read it as Hakal Kal Yaakov Hayodayim Yedei Esav. When the voice of Yaakov is weak, then Yodayim Yedei Esav, the hand of Esav, becomes strong. It's like an inverse proportion, that the more we are engaged in Torah and in Tefillah, and in Ma'asim Tovim, then Esav becomes weak. That is our best weapon against him. It's a bit, if you say a moshul, it's a bit like our body's immune system. We're told that we have to nourish our body's property and not with junk food. So we have proper vitamins and proteins, and we're supposed to have exercise. And all this nourishment and lifestyle is to fight the free radicals which can otherwise come along and hit us, chas v'sholom, with serious illnesses. So we have a constant battle all the time against these free radicals which can come to play. And by our nourishment, that will fight them. So that's in the physical sense. And in the spiritual sense, the nourishment which we have in fighting Amalek is with Torah and with Tefillah. And when we read Parsha Zocha, as we will this Shabbos, we say, Vayezanev b'cho kol ha-nechesh sholim acharecho. And Rav Sasson makes a big play on this word, nechesh sholim, and hidden inside it is the word nochosh, the snake. He says, Amalek is the snake. Homon is the snake. They are a manifestation of the same nochosh which came to attack Odom and Chava by trying to persuade them to eat from the forbidden fruit. They are the nochosh. And really, when Amalek comes to attack us, there is no logic. I mean, when Amalek attacked us for the very first time, we came out from Mitzrayim. We hadn't yet got to Har Sinai, but just beforehand, at Rephidim, Amalek came and attacked us. Why? No reason is given. It was unprovoked. There was certainly no territorial fight in terms of what most wars are about. So why were they fighting us? Says Rav Sasson, Amalek is the gematria of 240. 240 is the gematria of mar, bitter. They have a sour taste to them. However, we can fight them if we change the word round, mar, it becomes rom, mighty. We become righty with a nafochu. When we twist it round, rom al kogeim Hashem, rom is the exalted way that we can elevate ourselves. Rom is 240. So you might say, why is it that we have Parsha Zocha this week And we have this mitzvah of Zocha with Amalek, but we don't have this mitzvah of Zocha with all these other anti-Semites we've been experiencing. Alright, we have a mitzvah to remember Mitzrayim, and Pyro was very evil, and he was throwing our baby boys into water. But you don't have quite the same mitzvah of Zocha like you do with Amalek, where we say Midor Dor every single generation. Omvim Aleinu L'chaloseinu, as we say in the Haggadah. What is it about Amalek? So says Rav Sasson that the Amalek is the Nochosh which returns every single generation and is out to threaten us. Chazal tell us in the Gemara in Chulin Kuflav Ates, where is Haman alluded to in the Torah? And it gives a rather peculiar sentence. It refers to with Adam and Chava where they were told not to eat from the forbidden fruit. It says, Hamin ha'et. Hamin is the same letters as Haman. That is an allusion to Haman. So asks Rav Sasson, he says, you know, what's the big deal? What is this, a play just on words? Hamin ha'et? That you're not eating from the forbidden fruit. So he says, this is all about the Nochosh, the snake. Just as the snake was trying to persuade Chava, and then of course Adam, to eat from the forbidden fruit, that is the same Nochosh which Haman is doing to us in trying to persuade us. Hence Ha'et, he was hanged on the gallows Ha'et, and that is a direct reference to Haman. And this gematria we said of Amalek of 240 is also the gematria of the word Sofek. Sofek means a doubt, because what Amalek does, what the snake did, what Haman did, was to put this doubt in our minds. Haman sows the seeds of doubt and tries to destroy our emunah. Chava's doubt was created by eating from the forbidden fruit. That created a different kind of bechira, where Adam and Chava then had doubt about following the commandments of Hashem. And similarly, nowadays people have doubt sown in their head by the nochosh, by the snake, the yetzara, the sotom. And indeed, sad, very sad and tragic that we our parents and our grandparents experienced the Holocaust. It sowed the seeds of doubt in many people's minds, threatening their emunah. Haman and Amalek is the gap between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as we say, Kiyod al Keisko, we're going to line on Beshalach on Purim, Kiyod al Keisko, even Hashem feels that his sovereignty is threatened by Amalek, because the name is not written fully as Yud Kei Vav Kei. Why? Because the Nochosh is there to create our seeds of doubt. And Amalek attacked us in Rephidim. Gemara Bukhara Stafhei asks, Rav Chanina says, what does Rephidim mean? And he says, Rifu, it means becoming weak. We became weak in Torah. We became weak in Tefillah. We had reached such a low level. And Rashi there says, that is why Amalek attacked us. So when we try and attribute logic to the idea of Amalek, it doesn't exist. There is no logic in Amalek attacking us. That they attacked us straight out of coming out of Mitzrayim was the most ridiculous time of all, because the whole world could see that Hashem was on our side. After Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem did all these amazing miracles. He split the sea and he did the buckets. That any person in their right mind would say, let's keep away from these Jews. It's not logical to attack them. And yet, nevertheless, Amalek comes along and attacks. This is the ridiculous thing about Amalek. It's not logical. It's to do, though, with a reflection, says Rav Sasson, like tipping the scales. When we're very weak in Torah and Tefillah and Ma'aseh in Tovim, and also in Achdus in Klal Yisrael, and that's why we have Nikhalu v'Amod al Nafshom. Nikhalu, we have to come together as a Kehillah. That Haman knew that we were at a weak ebb. He said to Achashverosh, look, these people, they think the Torah protects them, but they are weak in Torah. And that is why we get our inroads. And he planted beautiful women outside the Feast of Achashverosh. Mordechai warns people don't go to the Feast of Achashverosh, but they didn't listen. They said, oh, we're worried about the Goyim, what the Goyim will say. We're worried that the Jews will be threatened by Achashverosh if we don't go to the feast. Mordechai said, don't go to the feast. And no real harm came to the Jews for a period of 9 years. It was only after that that Haman's decree came out. And Mordechai knew this. We were talking about Hamin Ha'et, that Chazal referred to Haman in Hamin Ha'et. There is also another pshat But Haman had loads of power. He was the prime minister. He had all the wealth he wanted. He was extremely rich because he plundered the Jewish riches from the temple. He offered Ahasuerus huge amounts of money in order to get rid of the Jews. And Ahasuerus said, no, it's okay, you can keep the money. But he had enormous wealth. So there's this explanation of Haminah 8. He had all the power and wealth, but he just wanted one thing, and that was to kill out the Jews. He wanted Mordechai out of the way. It's as if you're back in Gan Eden with Adam and Chava. They had all these trees, hundreds of lovely trees, lots of trees with beautiful fruit. And there was just one tree Hashem said, don't eat from it. And that was the tree they would go for. Hamin ha'eitz. So the attitude of Haman was, I've got all the power I want and I've got all the money I want, but I just want one little thing to kill out the Jews. And the Adam and Chava were tempted, just one little thing. They didn't have to go to work for a living. Everything was provided for them. But they just wanted that one thing, that one tree. That is the selfish person, the person who stoops so low. He's got everything going for him. Everything is fine. He's got his riches. He's got his job. He's got his family. He's got his panosa. But he just wants some silly small thing which puts him off the rails. That is the lesson of Haman. We also know that Mordechai and Esther are hinted at in the Torah. Mordechai is a funny play of words. What's that got to do with Mordechai? It's talking about the Ketores. And the Targum there says, Mirodakyo, which spells like the word Mordechai. So there he says that the idea of Ketores is that it contains the Chelbono, which is very smelly. But when you combine it with the incense, it was Reach Nichoach Lashem. And that is the idea of the Jews coming together, that separated Mefuzor Mefarod Beino Amim is something poisonous for us and spells our downfall. And we don't have Achdos and Ke'ish Echod B'Leil Echod, then we don't succeed. But if we have Lech Knosis Kol Ha'idim Nikhaluv Omod Anachshon come together as a Kehila, then we succeed against Haman and against Amalek. So Rav Sasson says, in a very interesting way, that when Yaakov Avinu talks about Becharbi of a Kashti, that he was fighting there, the Amori, and in Parshas Vayechi, in chapter 48, in verse 22, he says these words, Becharbi of a Kashti, with my sword and with my bow. It doesn't really mean that Yaakov Avinu was fighting with a sword and a bow. He didn't have these weapons, like a sword and a bow. All right, we do often need physical weapons to fight our enemies. But what is the main thing with which Yaakov Avinu was fighting? And Rashi there says, Chochmosi usifilosi, with my Torah, my Chochma, and with my davening. And the Gemara in Bava Basra says, Charbi zutefilo, kashti zubakosho. If you read the word Becharbi uvakashti, uvakashti reads also as uvakoshosi, and my davening, that the power of tefillah is so great that that is what fights our enemies. The Rav Sasson then moves on into giving quite a number of drushas on one pasuk in the Megillah, that it's taveu al Mordechai lo das mazev al mazev. Esther sent Hasoch Zudoniel, to go along to Mordechai when the decree had been made by Haman to find out what was going on, to learn what this was about and why. But Rav Sasson says the syntax of this pasuk is a bit odd in Hebrew terms. Lodas mazeh va'al mazeh. It could have been said in a shorter way, to find out what's happening. What's the news? Ma chadashot, ma nishma? So Lodas Malzeh Al Malzeh seems to be an emphasis, he says, on the word Zeh. And he gives 10 droshas on this pasuk, but I'm not going to go through them all. He says the important thing to know about the word Zeh is that it comes up when we do Parashas HaChodesh. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. There is an emphasis on the word Zeh, this. What is the connection between Rosh Chodesh and the subject of Lodas Malzev Al Mazeh? He says, the Jews are compared to the moon. And the moon has a cycle. It goes down in its size, or in its reflection, as it appears anyway. and then it reaches a very low ebb. And when the Jews are at their lowest ebb, that is when Hashem pulls us out of it, and then he raises us. It's an important idea in Jewish philosophy and Jewish history, that we had reached such a low ebb in Mitzrayim, and yet however low we felt we were, things began to get even worse. As Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Lomo hare oso lom azeh, why do you make it even worse now for the people that they have to make their own straw, etc.? As just as they thought that things were bad, things got even worse. But when they were at their lowest ebb, at their lowest madrega, that was when Hashem brought us out and gave us the geula. Thank you. And that is the story of Haman. We were at our lowest ebb. Yiddishkeit was not being kept properly. We were eating at the Suda Sachashverosh. And that was at the time when Esther became the queen. And that was the refuah coming before the Makkah. Hashem then would bring us out from the lowest madrega which we were in, to the high madrega of Kimu v'Kiblu Hayudim, which was like a second Kabbalah HaTorah. And this idea of coming from a low ebb to a very high ebb, we could even dare to say that when the Jews were at their lowest ebb in 1945, at that period of time, just then, when we had lost so many of our Kedoshim, this might sound a bit political, but that was the time when for the first time we began to get our own country where people could actually go somewhere with just because they were Jewish and become citizens of our own country. So we don't go into the politics here. We just know that many of our grandparents, they had to try and find visas to get out of Germany, and they just couldn't get out because countries were not accepting them. So the mere fact that now we've got somewhere to go where we can run away from this persecution was that at the lowest time of our history, we began to get a raising in our status. I did once ask Reb Matisyahu Solomon about this idea, because so many feel that it's a political thing and not a spiritual thing. And he said it's true that there's more Zionism in Shir HaMaalos B'Shuv Hashem than there is in the HaTikvah. And although there are people who try to say this phrase, Atzchalta the Geula, so that's the beginning of our redemption, he nodded and he said, yes, maybe, but the beginning of Christianity was also called Atzchalta the Geula, because so many people began to believe in one God. So there we've got this balance. But Shir HaMaalos B'Shuv Hashem gives us this feeling of moving higher, and we should hope that when Mashiach comes, we won't have to go down again into a low ebb in order to rise, and that the low ebb we already had should be the start that we shouldn't suffer any more tsoros. The word zeh also comes up in other places. Rav Sasson, it comes up in Machatzis HaShekel. Zeh yitnu kol ha'ovel ha'pakudim Machatzis HaShekel. What is the idea of the word zeh linked to lodas ma'zeh v'al ma'zeh? Everybody, he says, is like a half. None of us are complete without each other. We need each other for achdus. Leich kenosis kol ha'yudim. Gather together all the Jewish people. That creates the achdus. That's what fights Haman. So Rav Sasson says, in order to fight Amalek, in order to fight Haman, we need the Torah, we need the Tefillah, we need the Achdus. So you got in the mitzvahs of Purim the bittul of Amalek, first with the fast. As we said, the fast of Esther is not a sad day like other fast days are. It's a joyous day, because that is the way we are fighting Amalek, with our davening and with our slichas and with our fasting. And then on Purim itself, we read the Megillah, and that is a tikkun against the bittul haTorah, which caused us to face Amalek. And then we atone for eating at the Suda of Achashverosh by eating our Suuda on Purim, by eating a Suuda L'Shem Shemayim. And when we give Shlachmonos on Purim, that is to correct the lack of achdus in Klal Yisrael. When Haman said, Am mefuzor mefarod beino amim, they're a scattered people. They have no achdus with each other. They're constant squabbling and quarreling with each other. So we give Shlachmonos to enhance friendships. So you shouldn't be giving shachmonas to your close friends. You should be giving to the shachmonas to the people you're not so friendly with. And that will create more achdus in Klal Yisrael. And then lastly, the mitzvah of Purim is also matanas levyonim by giving tzedakah. When you give tzedakah, it's a sign of emunah. Why? Because people who give tzedakah who don't have emunah, they think they're losing money. They think they're sacrificing something from themselves. But when you give tzedakah, you'll get it back. Venosanu. The word is palindromic. It comes back to you. So when you give tzedakah, it's a sign of emunah that Hashem will make sure that you're not losing out from it. And that is a tickle for the lack of emunah which we had at the time when Haman came to power. Nevertheless, although Haman, we say, could be stopped by teshuva, there is a burning question which comes out from the Megillas Esther. A question which I think is the most difficult question of all. I may have mentioned it once before, forgive me, but when this whole problem starts, how does it start? Read the text of the Megillah. Vayagidu laHaman, they told Haman that Mordechai was not bowing down to him. He was so haughty and proud that his nose was stuck in the air. He didn't even notice that Mordechai was refusing to bow down to him. But really, if you look at the words of the Pasuk, as a result of Mordechai not bowing down to Haman, Haman said, right, I'm going to kill the Jews. I'm going to kill Mordechai, and then, well, once I'm that's it with Mordechai, I might as well kill all the Jews. As if to say that he was provoked. So why did Mordechai, I can see that Gershon's got something to suggest.
Ibn Ezra.
Yeah, Ibn Ezra. What does the Ibn Ezra say?
Ibn Ezra, if I'm fully correct, Ibn Ezra says that Mordechai was not trying to provoke Haman, he couldn't move away from the Shah Melech because he had a royal position and he was one of the courtiers of that. So he had to stay there and he wasn't going to bow down. So otherwise, he could have just said, Mordechai, just go meet Haman, go away.
Okay. For those who didn't hear it, Gershon is quoting the Ibn Ezra. He says, well, Haman's job was to stand in the gates of Melech. And it says in the Pasuk, V'chol avdei ha-melech asher b'shar ha-melech karim mishtachalim lo-Haman. So that was Haman, that it was Mordechai's job as one of those people standing at the gate. The Maharal also says this in his Ur Chodosh. Thank you. Alright, many say that Haman was wearing an idol around his neck and it was Avodah Zarah, you don't bow down to an idol, but the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says that even after the idol was removed, Mordechai would still not bow down to Haman. And the question is intensified when you look at the fact that the way it's worded, lo yichrav, lo yishtachaveh, not just he didn't bow down, but he would not bow down, and he went out of his way to make sure that he was there when Haman walked past. That the whole amazing thing about Mordechai's behavior was that if Haman was walking through the palace gates at 9 a.m, Mordechai made sure he was there at 5 to 9. Dafka. Whereas other people would think, stay out of his way, stay at home, come a bit later. If Haman goes into the palace at 9 o'clock, then turn up at 5 or 10 past 9. But to stand there, Dafka, and provoke him, surely that was suicidal. Why was Mordechai doing this? So yeah, thank you for your answer from the Ibn Ezra. But it seems to be a much stronger thing to be able, you know, if we say all that with his job, we'll get another job. Alright, why was Mordechai standing at the gate? It seems that Esther said to Ahasuerus, look, every nation, every ethnic minority is represented at the gates of the palace, but the Jews are not represented. Why don't we bring in Mordechai? Okay, but surely it could have been Mordechai's way that he could have avoided nevertheless. You know, you can always phone in sick. You can always do something to say I'm on an errand, but just keep out of Haman's way and not to provoke him. It seems from the Pasuk that this provocation is what brought the whole trouble about. And I think this is the most burning question of Megillas Esther. Rav Meir Schlesinger Schlieter said to me, well, maybe Mordechai just didn't realize what he was doing. Maybe he didn't know. Maybe he knew that one doesn't bow down, and he didn't realize what the consequences would be. But there are difficulties with that answer because, you know, Mordechai was not an idiot. He was one of the Sanhedrin. He was one of the Gedolei Hador. He had Ruach HaKodesh. That might be the answer to the question. And as you say, the Ibn Ezra talks about the job, and the Maharal says this. The Maharal also says another thing. He says, Mordechai felt his job was to make a Kiddush Hashem. And that time of Kiddush Hashem, you should be willing to sacrifice your life. Because it's not only Gila Roros, Shvit HaStomim, and Avodah Zorah, where one might give up when one has to give up one's life for Hashem. Kiddush Hashem is a fourth thing. That when Kiddush Hashem is at stake, like Rabbi Akiva dying and so on, that was Kiddush Hashem. But again, to sacrifice the whole Jewish people, that would be difficult to understand. Rav Dessler writes an interesting essay on this in his first Chelek, Bichtov Melio. And he says, Mordechai knew that we, the Jewish people, had an account to settle between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had feasted at the Sudas HaChashverosh, and that we did not listen to the warnings of Mordechai. Mordechai regarded this as a very big aveira, even if the food was kosher, even if it was kadasya, even if it was not kadasya, but other better hechsherim. There were various Jews who were making sure they were there to serve and not to eat and so on and so forth, and tried to get round it. They were warned, don't go to the Sudas HaChashverosh. Mordechai, he says, Rav Dessler, knew that trouble was coming. The writing was on the wall, as it were. Whether or not there had been a decree yet, notwithstanding that, there had been a problem. His bottom line is Emunas Chachomim. You know, if Chazal are telling you something, then heed their warnings. Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh, and people were not heeding his warning. The Jews were in trouble. And Rav Dessler sees that as a red herring that Mordechai was not bowing down to Haman, even though it looks like a provocation. There's an interesting idea brought by Rabbi Miller in his Sefer Torah Nation. He says, Mordechai knew that Haman was out to kill the Jews. So he thought like this. He says, if I could just divert Haman's attention to myself, then I can save the other Jews. Why? Because if I do provoke Haman, and I stand and show I'm not bowing down to him, then Haman will try and kill me. And in order to kill me, he'll go to Achashverosh to get his sanction that he kills me. If in fact this is what Haman wanted to do, did do in the middle of the night, to get the king's agreement to kill Haman. And Mordechai thought to himself, without any gaiva, I know that the king will be on my side, because I saved the king. I reported to the king about the assassination attempt of Bigson and Seresh. So the king will therefore be suspicious of Haman, and therefore he will kill Haman instead of me, and then I'll get rid of Haman that way. So I'll sacrifice my life, or put it at risk, just in order so that the king goes against Haman, and that in turn will save the other Jewish people. That's Rav Miller's cheshbon. Rav Sasson looks at it in a similar way to Rav Dessler, but he says, Amalek never kills through provocation. As we said, when we came out from Mitzrayim, Amalek was there attacking us. Why? They were opportunistic. The Jews. We hate the Jews. That's it. Why do they hate the Jews? That's another story. We discussed the ways of Amalek when we spoke about the Titanic some while ago. What is the cause of anti-Semitism? What is the logic behind anti-Semitism? Rav Sasson says, Amalek was not killing through provocation. Amalek only goes for us when our spiritual defenses are down. Hakal kol Yaakov, hayadayim yaday Esav. When we're not engaged in Torah and Tefillah and in Achdus, then Amalek is strong. Then Amalek goes for us. That's where the logic is. And Mordechai, he knew Haman's plans in advance. He knew what Haman wanted to do. So he was perhaps bringing it to the fore. He was bringing it out into the open by being Dafka, standing there while Haman walked past and not bowing down. My own grandfather, Zatzal, knew what Hitler's plan was. In 1938, people claim they didn't know what Hitler's plan was, but in November 38, at Kristallnacht, which my family managed to survive, there was a Nazi living above my grandfather in the same building. And my grandfather used to give him cigars, saying, "Oh, I've tried this new one. Would you like to share it with me?" And he made friends with him that way. My grandfather knew who he was dealing with. And when it came to Kristallnacht, this Nazi shouted out to his colleagues, "Leave that Jew alone. He's all right. He's a good Jew." And this Nazi told my grandfather, "You know, I'm not allowed to tell you this, but there is a plan. There is a plan to kill out all the Jews." Crazy than it may sound, that's what's going to happen. And that was when my grandfather decided he's just got to get out with his family. And it was only through the goodness and kindness of Rabbi Dr. Solomon Scholfeld that my mother's family managed to get out. So here is Homon. He's a terrorist. He's coming in any case. But owing to the lack of Torah, Tefillah, and Achdus, and our not avoiding the Suda of Achashverosh, that made Homon very strong. And Mordechai knew this. So to accuse Mordechai of being irresponsible is to fail to see the very strong pending threat. The Jews were spiritually bankrupt, and Mordechai knew this. As it says in Gemara Megillah, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, the poor people, we were called a poor people, poor in mitzvahs. We were under the bear. Homon was called the bear, who was out to devour us. And as the Gemara says in Megillah Yud Gimel, Homon tells the king that the Jews will not merit divine protection because they're negligent in their mitzvahs. So we know how we fight Homon. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to quote Aesop's fables in an important holy shul such as this, but since it's no longer part of the union, I think I've got less risk in doing so, to quote a little story from the famous Aesop. Aesop in his fables talks about the wolf which is drinking from the river. And lower downstream in the river, there's a small lamb which is sipping small amounts of water. And the wolf looks up and sees the lamb and says, "Why are you muddying my water?" And the lamb looks up astonished. The lamb is saying, "Well, I'm only touching it with the tip of my tongue. I can't be muddying the water. And besides, you're upstream and I'm downstream. So I'm getting your germs. You're not getting my germs." So the wolf says, "You've been going around for 6 months saying nasty things about me." And the lamb says, "I was only born 3 months ago." So the wolf says, "Oh, then it must have been your father." And the wolf goes up to the lamb and eats him up. And there it's written, a bad excuse is good enough for a bully. That is what Amalek is all about. What is the reason that Homon wants to kill the whole Jewish people in 127 countries? Because one man doesn't bow down to him? Come on. It's a bad excuse which the bully has. In Hebrew you say hitnat slut, a justification, to try and find a reason for something. When Hitler, Yirach Shemo, wanted to kill out the Jews, what did he say? "We have to have a pure race, the Aryan race." What sort of excuse is that? But nevertheless, however big the Russia is, however wicked the person is, they'll always find a reason to give. But it's only political. It's not really a reason when you look at it. It falls apart. If you ever waste your time and read Mein Kampf, it's a very poorly written thing. It's not very well written at all. You can't find in it any justification. It's just spelling out hate. There is no hitnut slut there. And just to understand the Nazi war machine, when they try constantly to give their reasons that the Jews are the enemy. Why were the Jews the enemy? What did we do to them? There was a famous Nazi called Hermann Rauschning, quoted in a book called The Voice of Destruction. And he tried to justify the Holocaust. He says the Jews inflicted two wounds on mankind: circumcision on its body and conscience of its soul. "They are Jewish inventions," he said. "I am freeing humanity from the degrading suffering called conscience and ethics. The struggle for world domination will be fought entirely between us, the Germans, between the Germans and the Jews." Have you ever heard such codswallop? Such a nonsense. But they want to make themselves sound rational. That is the logic, or illogic, of the Nazis of Amalek. And any nation, says Rav Sasson, who comes along, in whatever generation, and says that they want to do away with the Jews, whatever their reason, they are Mizrah Amalek. And you hear this nowadays coming from the voice of Iran. That is the Zerah Amalek, he says. Israel is amongst the nations like a lamb is amongst 70 wolves. That's in the Pesikta Rabosi and in Esther Rabba, in Peret Yud, in Sif Yud Beis. And it seems that the Medrash is simply reflecting or predetermining what Aesop's fables was going to say about the wolf and the lamb. So when the whole victory came about against Haman, Kimu v'Kiblu HaYehudim, it was like a second Matan Torah. Why do we say Kimu v'Kiblu? Because at Har Sinai, we say in Gemara Shabbos Peches, they accepted the Torah, but they only accepted the Torah willingly as far as Torah Shebiksav was concerned, the written Torah. Hodo Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh, afterwards they accepted it, the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law, Bimei Achashverosh. Why? What did it mean they accepted the oral law? Because the Jews realized that Mordechai was right. When he said, don't eat at the Sudas Achashverosh, he was giving them the Torah Shebal Peh. He was giving them the word of mouth. Just like in every generation, we have our rabbis guiding us and teaching us. They had refused to listen to Mordechai. But had they done so, the Torah Shebal Peh would have become alive. And that's what it means by saying that Kimu Masha Kiblu Kavar. So what are the lessons that we learn from what we've said so far, particularly from Rav Mordechai Sasson in his Sefer Dovah Be'ito? We learn that Tanis Esther is not a sad day. It's part of the joyous package of Purim. Because by not eating and doing teshuva on a day of fasting and saying salichas, that is our weapon against Amalek. And we can enter Purim without the Satan accusing us that we're just feasting in a frivolous way. We nourish and protect ourselves with Torah and Tefillah. We nourish ourselves by having achdus and avoiding any machlokas in Klal Yisrael. And we also learn the lesson that if you are making silly excuses for your averus, just like Haman did, they are not reasons at all. So to put ourselves into the Purim mood, I thought I've got to summarize this year in a different, untraditional way. Haman became a man of renown who wanted the Jews to bow down. When Mordechai wouldn't, for he knew he shouldn't, Haman began his evil countdown. Esther in fear sought the king after he had given Haman his ring. Mordechai became blessed. Gone was Haman the pest. From the gallows bad Haman did swing. Our learned rabbis have said, on Purim it's great to be fed, but it can be rather risky. If I have lots of wine and whiskey, I might end up cursing Mordechai instead.